And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Friday, May 12, 2023. The head of the UN mission in Sudan calls for a ceasefire across the country.
So as violence in Sudan continued for a fourth week, around 200,000 refugees and returnees have been forced to flee the country, with more crossing borders daily seeking safety. Additionally, hundreds of thousands have been internally displaced.
And the International Committee of the Red Cross welcomes the Jeddah Declaration signed by the two factions of Sudanese army battling on the streets across the country.
First of all, I'd like to take the opportunity to welcome the Jeddah Declaration. I think it's one step. People expect more. They expect peace. They expect ceasefire, including humanitarian organizations. We expect more.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some 200,000 people have fled from Sudan to neighboring countries since violence erupted last month, a spokesperson said on Friday, adding that tens of thousands have arrived in Chad in recent days. At the same briefing, UNICEF spokesperson James Elder said a factory in Sudan's capital Khartoum producing food for malnourished children has been burnt down. The blaze destroyed enough food for 14,500 children suffering from malnutrition. Airstrikes and artillery pounded Khartoum on Friday after Sudan's warring army and rapid support forces paramilitary failed to agree a ceasefire despite committing to protect civilians and allow humanitarian access. The so-called Declaration of Principles was signed in Saudi Arabia late on Thursday, after nearly a week of talks between the two sides, but neither has yet released statements acknowledging the deal. Since clashing suddenly erupted on April 15, the rival military factions have shown no sign they are ready to offer concession to end fighting that has killed hundreds and threatens to pitch Sudan into a full-blown civil war. Volker Perthes, UN Special Representative of the Secretary General for Sudan, told journalists in Geneva on Friday that mediators would reach a ceasefire in the next few days, saying that he had assurances from one of the sides that they would continue negotiations in Saudi Arabia.
So as violence in Sudan continued for a fourth week, around 200,000 refugees and returnees have been forced to flee the country, with more crossing borders daily seeking safety. Additionally, hundreds of thousands have been internally displaced, with many more people confined to their homes and unable to access necessities. The humanitarian response to this emergency is challenging and costly, not only inside Sudan because of insecurity, but also as refugees and returnees are arriving in remote border areas in neighboring countries where services and infrastructure are scarce or non-existent.
That was UNHCR spokesperson Olga Sarado. Perthes says the parties to the conflict should silence the guns.
We expect these talks on ceasefire to start off again from today or from tomorrow. It shouldn't technically take too long to agree on the modalities of a ceasefire, but of course it's also a political question where the negotiators in Jeddah have to go back to their respective leaderships.
He says both parties are working on how to have an upper hand in the conflict.
The lack of respect for a ceasefire is not necessarily because an agreement is not complete or is not detailed enough. It is also because both parties still think that they can win that war and they are taking opportunities to improve their position on the ground. The difference to the first week of war is that, and again, that's my interpretation from my conversations with both sides, that both sides have realized that even if they win, it will not be a quick win.
Still on Sudan, the International Committee of the Red Cross says it welcomes an agreement signed by Sudan Armed Forces and the Paramilitary Rapid Support Forces to allow aid agencies deliver much-needed help to residents caught up in Sudan's conflict. ICRC Communication Officer in Khartoum, Germaine Mehu, says civilians trapped in cities across Sudan are facing serious food and water shortages.
The gender declaration, I went through some of the points in the declaration. The parties have taken upon themselves to work with credible organizations that will help those who need help. And ICRC was mentioned in the document. Are you in touch with the parties to make sure that they commit themselves to this pledge?
First of all, I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome the gender declaration. I think it's one step. People expect more. They expect peace. They expect ceasefire, including humanitarian organizations. We expect more. But what has been achieved so far in Jeddah, it's one step. We should welcome it. Now, when it comes to International Committee of the Red Cross, together with Sudanese Christian Society, we are mentioned in the document. We are ready to continue working with both parties to implement what they have agreed, which means concretely to provide humanitarian assistance to those in need. The RCRC is in contact with both parties, and we expect that what they have agreed in Jeddah will be implemented in the field.
Could you bring us up to speed about how civilians who are trapped in Khartoum are getting food and water supplies?
Exactly. Today, it's almost 1 month since the beginning of fighting in Khartoum and other cities of Sudan. And the situation is becoming worse, especially for civilians who are still in Khartoum. Some managed to leave Khartoum to go to other places and to go out of the country. But we still have civilians in Khartoum and other cities of Darfur affected by fighting. Now the situation is very bad because most of hospitals don't work. People don't have food, and many areas of Khartoum, there is no water, there is no electricity. And even for those who can have access to food, they don't have money because banks don't work, so people, they don't have cash. This is the situation not only in Khartoum, but also in many cities of Darfur, Niala, Al-Fashir, Al-Janina, affected by fightings since 1 month now.
And other aid agencies have reported that insecurity have made it very difficult for delivery of emergency assistance. Who are you working with to ensure ICRC delivers the much-needed help to those who need them at this point?
The International Committee of the Red Cross, together with the Sudanese Red Crescent Society, we have called on both parties, the armed forces and the rapid support forces, asking them to facilitate the work of humanitarian organizations. Sometimes it works, but many times due to insecurity, due to lack of security guarantees, it's very difficult for humanitarian organizations to assist those in need. For example, last week we managed to provide medical assistance to a hospital in Khartoum and also hospitals in Darfur. Together with the Sudanese Red Crescent Society, we have started what we call management of the dead. It means to organize burial for dead who are still in streets in Khartoum. Sometimes it works, but most of the time, as I was saying, it's very difficult because we don't have enough security guarantees from those who are fighting.
And visiting detainees on both sides and reestablishing contacts with their family members who were separated with them have been some of your key mandates. Talk to us about how you intend to achieve this in cities in Sudan that are affected by conflict.
Restoring family links, especially during armed conflict, it's a mandate of the International Committee of the Red Cross together with national societies of Red Cross and the Red Crescent Societies. Since the beginning of this crisis, the RCRC, together with Red Cross and Red Crescent National Societies in the region, we have started helping people to restore contacts. Those who are separated due to conflict. It works globally well. Many people are calling. Many people now, they have contact with their loved one thanks to this program we call Restoring Family Links. But when it comes to detainees, so far, the ICIC hasn't started visiting detainees in Sudan following the fighting. We hope in coming days we'll get agreement from all parties to visit those who are detainees following the fighting.
That's Germaine Mehu, ICRC's communication officer in Sudan. He spoke with me via WhatsApp from Khartoum this past hour. At Chad's border with Sudan, Sudanese security forces tell VOA they fled their country because they have neither supplies nor ammunition to fight their opponents, the paramilitary rapid support forces. As the rule of law breaks down in Sudan, Darfur's region, analysts and other aid groups say the risks of the conflict spreading to the neighboring countries is high. Henry Wilkins reports from Kafourné, Chad.
Refugees fleeing insecurity in Sudan's western Darfur wade across the river separating the country from its neighbour, Chad. Among those who have arrived here in Kafourné are members of the Sudanese security forces who say they've fled their country because they do not have enough supplies or ammunition to fight the paramilitary rapid support forces, or RSF, which they say carried out a deadly attack on their town of Tendete, just across the border. VOA has withheld the policeman's name to protect his safety. He says he decided to flee Sudan in April. He says a policeman was killed and the state itself did not have the capacity to react. Other policemen also crossed the border with him by car, one of whom told other people to leave the town too. He says any policeman who met a criminal couldn't do anything. The police were unable to arrest or punish people. VOA spoke to another Sudanese policeman, as well as refugee and host community leaders, who confirmed 10 or 11 cars full of fleeing Sudanese security forces had crossed the border in the past 3 weeks. Refugees told VOA that insecurity and lawlessness have rocketed in Darfur since the country's civil war started in mid-April. Aid groups say they fear the instability could spread to Chad and other neighbouring countries. Will Carter is the Norwegian Refugee Council country director for Sudan.
It's a real risk, to be honest, and the regional refugee crisis is only just starting. But this is a hugely vulnerable region. The outflow of people is just one aspect of really a destabilizing situation for the whole region that Sudan is in some ways in the middle of. So we're very worried.
Mohammed Abdul Karim Abdeh is a community leader in Kafourné, which is hosting thousands of Sudanese refugees. He's less worried about insecurity crossing the border into Chad. He says the community didn't expect it, but the Chad government has assigned policemen to the border and sent reinforcements too. He says the community is not afraid and feels safe in Kafourné. Bakary El-Medni, a Sudan expert at Long Island University, describes how a Sudanese government breakdown could affect the region.
I think we're talking about a space of probably half of Europe and with 500 million people or more. That could be open to all kind of lawlessness and activity of terrorism and all kind of things.
He points out that the RSF is already aligned with rebel groups in Chad and the Central African Republic, and that the instability is fertile ground for terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda and Islamic State to take root, as in other Sahel countries. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Kafourné, Chad.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, who is helping the fighters in Sudan's conflict? Find out more after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how does your family take care of an elderly relative?
Once in a while, we sit down with him, speak with him, ask him how he's doing so he doesn't feel lonely. Then we also tell him about what is going on in the world so that he doesn't feel left out.
We make sure we provide the basic needs like food, water, make her happy, not to feel rejected. Because when they are growing and you start to abandon them. They see that they are not needed. And showing them love even brings them healing.
Helping them with the domestic chores, for example, preparing meals for them, helping them with the clothes, cleaning up the house.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Officials at the just-concluded talks in Jeddah say the two sides in Sudan's military conflict remain far apart in ceasefire talks. The situation appears to be heavily dependent on external actors whose involvement could either intensify or improve the situation. Sudan faces a highly fragmented scenario with regional and international support divided among different factions. Joseph Stegley, Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, explains to VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi what the major external and internal factors are.
External actors are trying to establish a ceasefire, create a pause in the fighting, which can open up some humanitarian corridors. In the process of doing so, the hope is that this will create some confidence-building steps that then each side can build on to begin to bargain in good faith. Now, to move this along, each of the regional international actors who are involved and who are focused on stabilizing Sudan, they need to convey to the military actors in Sudan, General Burhan and General Hemeti, that there isn't a viable military solution. You know, even if one side were to win a military victory, they face the same challenges that the military government faced before. You know, there's a lack of legitimacy, deep popular resentment, a collapsing economy, need for massive investment. All of these things are what drove Omar al-Bashir out of office in 2019, and they've only gotten worse. So international actors need to be conveying those messages to the two rival generals currently and to help incentivize them to move toward a negotiated outcome. Now, time matters because the longer this goes, the more likely that two sides are going to see a fragmentation of their forces, and then it will become a battle of militias, and it's going to be a lot harder to control and come to some sort of negotiated settlement. And in the same way, we see that external actors have their own interest, and the longer that this goes, the more likely they are to intervene and try to secure an outcome that works for them. And so I think that's part of the challenge, that international actors aren't in consensus on Sudan. Many would be happy to see a military government continue. Many of the Gulf actors are afraid that if a democratic government were to take root in Sudan, they would put pressure on themselves. And so, you know, they have alternative visions. Others are looking at taking advantage of the situation in Sudan and creating some sort of vassal state arrangement through a proxy. And in the process, Sudan would lose a high degree of its sovereignty, as well as face ongoing instabilities. And so trying to find a solution for this conflict quickly is a high priority. And, you know, this brings us back to the role of civilian actors. Civilian actors represent the vast majority of Sudanese. You know, they have been highly organized for years leading up to the protest in 2019, calling for a democratic transition. And they continue to do so. They have put forward their own path for a way forward. And civilian government, ironically, that offers the best prospects for a stable and sovereign Sudan. And, you know, it may be that a civilian government is the outcome that each of the rival generals can most palatably accept if they themselves can't come out on top of this. And so I think it's important to keep the civilians in mind and make sure they have a seat at the table.
Former Sudanese Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok has issued a warning that the conflict may escalate to levels even more dire than those seen in Syria and Libya. Could the Sudan conflict become the region's next worst crisis?
I think it very easily could be. You know, there are so many external actors with interest in Sudan that there is very strong incentives for them to get involved. And to the extent that Sudan becomes a regionalized conflict, it becomes many times more complicated and difficult to bring it to resolution. And, you know, these external actors, as we've seen in Yemen or Libya, you know, they have ability to pour resources into the conflict without bearing bearing significant cost in terms of human lives, disruptions, infrastructural devastation. And so, you know, they can prolong that conflict and exacerbate it much more deeply and for a longer period of time than the Sudanese actors would themselves. And I think the other element of that is if and when one external actor becomes involved, we're going to see others jump in to try to counter their influence. And that could lead to quite a prolonged and very devastating conflict in Sudan.
From Sudan, we move to South Sudan, where some lawmakers in the country's National Assembly have summoned ministers to explain the cause of high food prices. A parliamentary committee says lawmakers are concerned about the struggles of South Sudanese looking for food. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
John Agai, chairperson of the Specialized Information Committee in the Transitional National Legislative Assembly, says the ministers of Finance, Investment and East African Community should explain how they plan to address the country's economic crisis. He says some families across South Sudan are going without meals for days.
We are dying. As I speak today, I want to buy a bag of sugar for my family. I want to buy a bag of maize for my children. I want to buy food. So we as the member of parliament, we are not keeping quiet. We are questioning the government that we have problem, and the government must give a solution to problem that we face, especially the financial problem. The minister concerned of our economy, all of them, including the minister of finance, they have to be called. And they have to answer right, and they have to give the hours a correct answer.
An official with the Central Equatorial State Chamber of Commerce and a civil society activist told this program on Thursday that the depreciation of the South Sudan pound in recent weeks has led to sharp increase in commodity prices across markets in South Sudan. Agany says he believes there are several factors causing inflation in the country.
One of them is that South Sudan is not productive in any way. We always defend of imports. We don't have export in the country. And for that matter, when you are a consuming community, you are already in the hot soup.
South Sudan relies on Sudan for exporting its crude oil and importation of some raw materials for the production of crude oil, which accounts for more than 90% of the country's revenue. Sudan Thomas, a member of the Specialized Committee for Public Accounts at the Transitional National Legislative Assembly, says the ministers who were summoned will inform the parliament about how they plan to address the rising cost of living.
Because this high price, because of the high rate of dollar, is making everything very, very worse for the common people of the Republic of South Sudan. Because now even to buy green, it's a problem. To buy anything is a problem. We really need to do something such that our people cannot go hungry or die of hunger.
Thomas says the increase in food prices has prevented majority of civil servants and members of the organized forces across the country to put food on the table for their families. South Sudan's Deputy Minister of Finance blames the fighting in Sudan for the rising food prices in South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
We love your remarks on issues in this broadcast. My colleague Nabil Biagio is on standby. Over to you, Nabil.
Thank you, John. This listener says, hello, John Tanza and Nabil Biagio. I am Peter Ajag Ayom, a civil society activist in Bor of Jonglei State. Let me take this precious opportunity to thank and appreciate the government of the Republic of South Sudan for approving $15 million to respond to the returnees and refugees coming from Sudan. However, my worry is that this money will end up in some individuals' pockets. Perhaps corruption and misuse of public money has become the common practice by Junubin. May Lord Almighty God touch their hearts to always think about the suffering of the common citizens. James Ray Majok from Unity State in Bantu Town says, "Hi Nabil Biagio and John Tanza. I am appealing to the Sudan Armed Forces commanders Burhan and Hemeti. Let Sudan have peace and harmony. War will not bring peace to all of Sudan. There is no development when people are at war. I have learned from my own country, South Sudan. When our politicians created war in the whole South Sudan country, things became very difficult for everyone." Mal Adao Mal in Washington State, Seattle says, "Please assist me with the link for South Sudan in Focus evening newscast. Over 3 weeks now here in the States without listening to the news. Regards." The South Sudan in Focus fan says, "Dear John Tanza, thank you for your wonderful program, South Sudan in Focus, on VOA Africa 93.6 FM in Juba. However, we are missing many programs like Border Crossing by Larry London or VOA Hits by Lady DJ. We only listen to these through shortwave radio. We would be very glad if you could add these programs on the VOA Africa in Juba 93.6 FM. Thank you, Kenyi Ibaya in Juba." Another listener says, "I am Adfara Elias from Juba. My message to Hemeti, let him bring peace in Sudan." This fan says, "Hello, VOA Africa. I'm Asega Ludanga, right from DRC Congo. My message is I'm appealing to the South Sudanese leaders to speed up the peace process since years are going. When will South Sudanese enjoy total peace in their country? Otherwise, failure to make it, sanctions should take place for the leaders in South Sudan. Thanks, VOA team, for your daily updates." Boddim Dotai in the Mangaten IDP camp in Juba says, "Hello, John Tanza and Nabil Biagio. Good evening. I thank God for my mom and my sister and her sons for guiding them on their way from Khartoum to the border of Sudan and South Sudan and managing to escape the Khartoum fighting where 500 plus people have been killed and more than 6,000 were injured. Thank God for his guidance and protection." Peter Gonyanyang Majungdul in the border town of Akobo in Jonglei State says, "Dear Nabil, the encroachment of Uganda and Kenya on our territory is alarming and needs intervention by the national government through the Ministry of Foreign Affairs to make sure that international borders are respected and local communities are secure from foreign aggressions like what happened in Kajukeji." Martin Manuel Wugol in Juba says, "Hello, John and Nabil. Allow me to congratulate Honorable Acting Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation Deng Dao Malik for his efforts in explaining the correct South Sudan government approach put in place to end political conflict in neighboring Sudan. Because fighting in Sudan is an immediate concern for South Sudan's top leadership, and therefore His Excellency President Salva Kiir Mayardit should be given a chance to mediate Sudanese peace in Juba for a better and durable solution to Sudanese conflicts." And finally, Jacob Dior Machueng from Ural in Lake State says, "The death of over 400 Congolese by flooding is alarming and the national government in Jonglei State should prepare in advance to avoid damages that might be caused by floods since River Congo supplies seasonal rivers, including the Nile. The views expressed here do not reflect the views of VOA or of this program. We appreciate hearing from all of you. Keep those comments coming."
That's all we prepared for you this Friday. We now leave you with some songs from West Africa. This one is entitled Tali. Listening to that beautiful melody from Mali, I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Kelvin Fowler, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.